Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of the Crispy Compact Communique, the 2021 COVID alternate universe version of the Crispy Noodle Podcast. We're here. We're still giving you sports, entertainment, and odd news, despite the fact I still don't have a laptop. We're still in the middle of a pandemic. It's still snowing. It's everything here in 2021. But nevertheless, we still give you a fresh new episode every week. Thank you guys for tuning in. I'm Rich Liebig.
And I'm Michael Costanzo.
And yeah, we've got some topics to discuss in sports, entertainment, and odd news. And you will get some interesting viewpoints. If you're viewing the visual version of this podcast, something I just realized is me and Mike are right now contrasting colors. I am all blue and Mike is all red. I don't know.
This was not planned at all.
Are we like Ready Player One? Are we like ready to duel off?
Maybe, yeah.
So maybe that is a sign of interesting conversations to come. But before we get into some topics in sports, entertainment, and on news, we like to do a little personal bit. Mike, how are you doing out there in Redland?
I'm doing good in Redland. Yeah, it was a good past week. Jordan and I made some lasagna for Valentine's Day, which was good. She made the lasagna noodles, and we made everything from scratch. You know, it was really, really tasty. It was a long process, but it was well worth it. Other than that, my dad officially retired this past weekend.
Oh, yeah. Hey, so, Frankie.
So congrats to him. He's been spending his retirement working.
Frankie Five Fingers.
Frankie Five Fingers. He's good. He's good. He retired, but the past 2 days, he's still been working on the job that he was working on before he retired. He's just a consultant now. So like nothing has changed.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Get that sweet consultant money.
Well, we'll see. But so he's enjoying his retirement. There's a little bit more TV watching during the day now that he's retired, but he's still working hard. And on my end of things, you'll be happy to hear this one, Rich. I finished season one of Cobra Kai.
Yes. What'd you think?
It was actually pretty good. I was pleasantly surprised by the entire package. So I started watching it with Jordan and she hated it. She says she hated it, but she was smiling and laughing at parts. So I don't think she hated it that much. I think she hated more the fact that she was starting to get invested in it. But she didn't seem to want to continue on with it. So I've just been watching it on my own. And I have to admit, I do agree to a certain degree that I am annoyed that I'm liking it, but there's an undeniable charm to it where you can't help but get invested in it.
It's a good show.
It is good. I like the fact that the characters are neither good nor bad guys. They all have, you know, certain redeeming qualities, and they also have certain dickish qualities. You know, the good guys from the previous movies are now kind of insufferable.
Yeah, and they're on their high horse. They think
right, exactly.
They have the moral high ground.
Exactly. And on the flip side, the bad guys are still bad, but they're now our protagonists. So we sort of want them to succeed just because that's who we're following. So it creates this little interesting dynamic for the viewer. It's like you want the bad guys to succeed, but you know, it's like, oh God, you guys actually kind of suck. But also the quote unquote good guys from the previous movie also kind of suck. So everybody kind of sucks, which makes them all real and relatable.
Yeah. Everybody is a shade of gray. There's no black or white.
Yeah, exactly. And so I like that. I like the flipping of the script, you know, with the former rivals now becoming sort of senseis themselves. And I'm not going to concern myself too much with spoilers here because it's, you know, it's a fairly, you know, quick and show, and it's been out for a couple years now at this point. But I just watched my favorite scene of the entire first season is when the one kid gets injured during the karate tournament, which it's basically a shot for shot remake of the first movie, like the entire first season, like so many of the same story beats. It's so cringy, but it's enjoyable. And that sort of corny, cheesy 80s vibe. But he gets injured. And so Daniel goes back there and he claps his hands together and he starts rubbing his hands together. And my dad's going, oh, he's going to do the Miyagi thing. And then he goes, medic, and calls for a medic. And I mean, all of us just busted up laughing because it was, you know, if you've never seen the movie, he does this thing where he claps his hands together, rubs them real fast. And in the first movie, Miyagi puts his hands on Daniel and magically heals him or whatever nonsense. So it looked like, oh my God, they're going to do the same gimmick. It's going to be, you know, such a weird, you know, fan service, pandering nostalgia moment. And it flips the script there at the end, which I appreciated. So it keeps you on your toes. It's surprisingly funny. It's charming.
The showrunners, they just know what strings to pull at the right time. They're just so good at knowing what the audience needs. And I think the whole thing is great. Wait until you get to the other seasons. I think the whole thing is fantabulous. Go watch it if you haven't.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I have to echo your sentiment there. People should absolutely give it a shot. Go check it out. It's never bringing home any awards. It's never going to be at the top of any critics' lists. My dad keeps saying this is really a bad show, but he can't help but smile when he's watching it. And it's very much that type of show. It's not going to bring home any awards, but it's a feel good. It's very enjoyable. Yeah. It's very enjoyable, charming show that makes you want to keep watching. So I'm going to keep watching. Can't wait to start season two and figure out what happens. Oh, because the big lesson of season one, winning sometimes does not mean that you've won. You know, so I appreciate what?
I feel like that might be a lesson that the Eagles need to learn.
Oh, God.
We'll get into that in just a minute.
Yeah. But before we do that, Rich, what have you been up to recently? Anything fun?
Yeah. Valentine's Day weekend. Me and Rachel had a blast. We went to Lancaster.
Oh.
What'd
you do there?
So first off, I got to admit, it was actually a lot of, first off, it's a quicker drive than I thought it was going to be. We hit actually Lancaster in an hour flat, which I was surprised. I thought we'd have some more time. But Lancaster itself is a wonderful city. I gotta admit, me being from Philadelphia, you know, I heard Lancaster and I'm like, oh great, we're gonna be out with Amish and like middle of nowhere.
Hey, don't diss the Amish, Rich.
Oh, I can dish the Amish. They're weird. I don't know what you're doing out there in backwards Pennsylvania with no electricity. But nevertheless, they're not gonna listen to this podcast. They don't believe in electricity. All right.
I'm gonna print this on a wax cylinder. I'm gonna drive it out to the Amish. Okay.
You gotta
Rich?
Listen to this.
You gotta listen to this.
This guy is making fun of you. You have to invade Philadelphia.
So what'd you do out there with the Amish?
Yeah, so when I, you know, when I heard Lancaster, I was like, I kind of had my...
You had your doubts.
Yeah, my expectations were lower than normal. Right. But Lancaster, the city itself that they have is actually really wonderful. They have a great... great, like, for lack of a better term, like main center hub area, which was really cool to walk through. They have a huge war memorial statue.
Cool.
That kind of blocks traffic. It's weird. It's like there's the main road kind of like leads into this war memorial statue, and then it does like a half cock circle around it. It's like it wants to be a circle, but it's not quite a full circle.
Well, that doesn't sound efficient.
So driving is a little weird.
Okay.
But once you park and you walk around and you see the area, it's really cool. We went to a couple of shops. They have a very interesting place where they took an old warehouse and they repurposed it into like 20 mini local artists displaying their works and their items for sale.
That's pretty cool.
Somebody when I was there said that this is like Etsy in real life. And I'm like, yeah, that's pretty much what this is. And it was really cool. I bought a couple pieces.
Nice.
Because some were like nerdy things. Some was like rock stuff. So I really appreciated it. It was a lot of fun. There's actually a couple of really good restaurants that me and Rachel tried in Lancaster. That was really cool. One of them was called The Exchange.
Okay.
Which was really cool. It's actually located at the top of one of their tallest buildings in the city.
Oh, neat.
So you go in, you say you have your appointment, or appointment, your reservation appointment.
I have an appointment for dinner.
Yes. It's very important. I need reservation, I meant. So you go in and, you know, you tell them you have your reservation, and you're immediately directed to an elevator. This is why I probably said appointment. It feels more like you're going to like the doctor's office.
Yeah, right. Getting to an elevator. Yeah.
You get in this elevator, it shoots you up to the top, and up top they have this dining area, and you can overlook Lancaster. It was really cool.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. That's really neat. It was a good meal.
Yeah, it was a good meal. Yep.
Nice. Nice.
And me and Rachel stayed in at a bed and breakfast. So that was nice too.
Nice.
Waking up and getting a nice, lovely breakfast. It was a great weekend. I enjoyed it.
Nice. Awesome.
Yep.
Yeah. You know what? I've never been out to Lancaster.
Not even for like a school field trip.
No, I don't think, I think I may have driven past there through there.
Usually that's like for us here in Philadelphia and the suburbs, most schools, they have that like as like a mandatory, like third, fourth grade field trip. So
we didn't get that.
No,
my poor Catholic grade school couldn't go to Lancaster. No, I think I drove through there once when I was like visiting colleges and stuff. I don't remember what college I was out visiting, but I think I may have driven through that area because I remember all I wanted to do was see an Amish person. I didn't get to see an Amish person. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm any less strange, but I was definitely strange as a high schooler.
Okay, Mike, you want to go see an Amish person? Let's go to Lancaster.
It's not that far. I know.
Not that far. I made it to Lancaster an hour flat, so we can do it.
I know it's not that far. That's the thing, and I've just never decided to go out there. So
okay. You know what the funny thing is about when you get close to the Lancaster city limits, that's where you see like the Amish horse and buggies and stuff.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. They're operating as a vehicle on the road, even though they're a horse and drawn carriage. So by Pennsylvania state law, they have to put lights on their vehicle.
Right.
So
interesting.
Why? You already are forced to use electricity. Why?
Well, I think it's not that they can't use electricity. It's just that they try to make it the bare minimum. Like if they're legally required to do that, they'll do that, but they're not going to do like televisions and computers and stuff like that. That is not a lifestyle for me. Obviously, as we record a podcast on two laptops over Wi-Fi, you know, I don't know.
To me, it just seems like you're already being forced to, and then I dropped my phone. You're already being forced to use electricity.
See, Rich, you wouldn't drop your phone if you were living a simple Amish lifestyle with no phone.
Yes, I got too many wires.
You got too many wires.
I do, you're right. But
you know what commercial always cracked me up? I don't know if you remember these commercials back in the day. There was a fireplace, like one of those wood-burning like little stove things. It was an electric one, but it was always advertised being built by the Amish. I was like, why would the Amish build an electrical appliance?
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and I never trusted this commercial. Like back when I was a kid, I was like, why are the Amish building like a little electric stoves? Like that doesn't seem right. I wouldn't trust that.
Yeah.
So, but anyway.
Anyway, so there you go. Have some fun in Lancaster. I'd recommend going to the city, but if you're fascinated to see Amish people,
oh, I am,
then stay outside the city limits and try and find the lights behind a horse and carriage.
Okay.
It is weird. Like you're driving on a main road and all of a sudden you see just like lights, but they don't look like car lights. So right. What is that? Oh, it's horse and buggy from these Amish people.
And they're going real slow, aren't they?
Well, yeah, it's only one horsepower. Literally, it's one horsepower.
I don't think that's how it works.
Yeah, horsepower.
Is that how it works?
Yeah, it's one horsepower.
Their horse buggies are one horsepower?
Yeah, because it's one horse.
No.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem right to me. I mean, like, yes, I know that's where the term comes from, but it doesn't seem right to me to say that their horse and buggy is one horsepower.
Yeah, it's one horse.
They don't have a two-horse buggy?
Well, that would be two horses.
It would be two horses.
Right.
I'm gonna get those that four horsepower buggy.
Okay, you need four horses.
There you go. Yeah.
You gotta spend some money on that.
All right, what are we talking about, Rich?
Yeah, all right, we're delaying the inevitable. We got to talk sports, entertainment, and odd news. But to delay Eagles even further, I want to talk about this first in the world of sports, because I thought this was a very fascinating topic that Draymond Green brought up randomly in a post-game interview. And this doesn't have to stick with basketball either. This is kind of a general sports topic. In the world of professional sporting events, Draymond Green went off on a rant saying that there is a double standard between when players ask for a trade versus when a team is actively trying to trade a player.
Okay. So
the situation that he talks about is this potential trade that may happen with Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin. And what the two teams decided to do was, because they're in talks to trade each other, they are benching both of those players. Don't even sniff the uniform. Don't even get game ready. You're not playing. We do not want either of you two to get hurt while this trade is being finalized. And Green, in a post-game conference, came out to the players' defense and said that this is a crock of BS.
Okay.
Basically, why is it that when a player is specifically asking for a trade, like he saw with James Harden a couple weeks ago, Harden was kind of viewed as kind of being a diva and being I guess, for lack of a better word, basically being selfish because he wanted to pick where he wanted to go and everything like that, but he still had to play. He still had to get on the court, and he still had to put his, put out his best talent. Whereas now, the flip side, the teams want to do a trade, and they're saying, "Nope, let's put them in bubble wrap. We do not want anything to happen to them while the trade is happening. You guys don't do anything for the next 2 weeks until this trade goes through." So that's what he's saying is this double standard. Mike, what do you think? Does Draymond Green have a point here? Is this something that happens in sports?
Yeah, it is something that happens in sports where there's always a double standard, right? When a player does something, you know, the media, the teams, they drag them through the mud. They try to make them seem like they're, you know, selfish or whatever, or they're cancers to the team. But then when a team does it, you know, it's like exactly like he's saying, it's business reasons. Oh, it's strategy. It's this and whatever spin you want to put on it, but there's a double standard here. However, that being said, I don't know that I see the issue in this particular case, because if I were the situation of one of these players about to get traded, why would I want to risk an injury if I'm about to get traded? You know, why not just accept the benching and just, you know, shrug your shoulders and say, okay. Unless there's some incentive tied to play time or something. I mean, if the deal is close enough where they're benching them, why fight it?
So there could be incentives and stuff like that. So here's where I think you got to extrapolate this to, let's say, the off season. If two teams are looking to be active in trading, they're going to tell the player, you need to still be keeping up in the weight room. You need to still be able to do X, Y, and Z. You need to be in top physical shape. So there's kind of these demands that go when the team is actively trying to trade versus when the player's trying to trade, then he gets the crap thrown at him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I do see that. It's not fair that players get trashed on when they want to trade, when they want, you know, a change of scenery. It's weird. We expect some sort of loyalty from players. I mean, we've done it, you know, as Eagles fans, and just sports fans in general, we expect a certain degree of loyalty from players. But the reality of it is, like with any job, I mean, you know, in real life, you know, your employer doesn't have that kind of loyalty to you, you know? So it's always this weird dichotomy where it's like the player has to be, you know, the perfect example of a team player and show undying loyalty and always that high work ethic and high character when a team would never show that in return, period.
Yeah.
You know, I think back to like how Brian Dawkins was treated his last year here in Philly, you know, or Donovan McNabb. But as soon as a player does something wrong, you know, I mean, us included, we're the first ones to jump on the player, you know?
Yeah. I would say that the...
Rich, you still there?
Yeah. You froze a little bit there.
Yeah, you seem to have frozen on my end too. Okay, there we go.
Yeah, we're good.
God, I hate the pandemic.
Yeah. I would say the only other addition to this argument would be the fact that
Rich?
Players... Oh my gosh, did I lose Mike? Is it official?
Okay. I have no idea what happened or where I went. But everything froze on my end. I guess I was frozen on your end.
Yeah, that was fun.
Are you back? Are we back now? You gotta fill me in. What was happening?
Okay, so basically my next and final part of this discussion was gonna say that the other element is that the players do get paid, especially when you're talking about star players, they do get paid handsomely for their work. So I think there is a little bit of a trade-off you have to be willing to give as a, you know, superstar player, as one of these icons of each league. Yeah, I think Green is onto something, that there is a double standard between these two views when it comes to trades.
Yeah, there is. The players always there's a higher set of expectations about standards when it comes to the players than it does with the teams.
Yeah.
The players have to be impeccable, whereas the teams can do whatever they want to do, whenever they want to do. Treat the players like commodities.
Yeah.
You know, whereas the players have to lay down their life if asked to for the team.
Yeah.
So it's true.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move to the entertainment world before Mike has a heart attack in the sports sampler. We got to make it through two segments before you collapse.
Yeah, I know.
Let's do some entertainment news here. We got some PlayStation entertainment news. This first one I'm really excited about. The Last of Us TV series is going forward. This looks like a real project. It's going to happen.
Yep.
And these casting announcements happened. I can't believe this is going to be a real thing.
I know. This is our first tangible news, and it's really exciting. So let's just get right into it. Some casting was announced for the series. You have first Bella Ramsey from Game of Thrones playing Ellie. Those of you that watch Game of Thrones, you'll remember her as Lyanna Mormont, the little tiny Spitfire who, you know, shows up all the big tough guys and, you know, basically shouts them down with, you know, her amazing speeches and withering looks. So she has some really great badass acting chops. Can she bring the vulnerability to the role? We'll see. But the most exciting casting, I think, and I know you're really excited about this, but also from Game of Thrones, but The Mandalorian as well, Pedro Pascal as Joel. And when I saw that, I mean, I was like, okay, I can see that. I can definitely see him pulling off Joel. So these two characters, I think they did a great job of casting. I think that both of them are going to be fantastic. I've watched both of them in Game of Thrones, watching Pedro Pascal again in The Mandalorian. They're bringing some really big name talent to this show. They're not just finding nobodies. They're finding a young up-and-comer and somebody who's made a big name for himself very recently. So they're bringing the star power. They got the guys behind Chernobyl. They got game director Neil Druckmann. This is full steam ahead. They want this to be their next big genre piece. They want this to fill the void, you know, the sci-fi, fantasy, nerdy fandom void that Game of Thrones left. They want another big budget, high, quality sci-fi slash fantasy genre piece is what they're looking for.
Well, with this lineup, they're swinging for the fences, and I am all for it because The Last of Us has so much potential. I mean, there's such a great story behind the video game series. There's a lot of different avenues they can go in making the actual series itself. I really love the casting of Pedro Pascal. I mean, he proved with The Mandalorian that he can play that right balance between badass but also compassionate father figure, which is perfect for a character like Joel in this series. I'm looking forward to this. I'm very happy with all these news announcements for The Last of Us TV show.
Yeah. I'm going to throw in a rumor that I didn't put on the rundown, but I think I texted you about last week that Mahershala Ali was in the running to play Joel.
Yeah.
It was rumored. There were a couple of sources that said that. And while he obviously didn't get the role with Joel, there is another role that he would fit the part of. I believe his name is Henry from The Last of Us, part one. So, you know, we're still waiting to hear a lot of casting news, but there's still a lot of secondary characters that flesh out the journey. So I'm really interested to see who they cast. Because the secondary characters are just as important. I mean, they're the characters that color that world and who offer foils to the main characters, you know? But I'm super excited for this project. And, you know, I've never seen a video game property transition to film or TV and it be, you know, a good quality. I really think this is the first one that could buck that trend. I mean, it has all the pieces. It has the big name casting, has direct, like super direct involvement from the game director. He's writing and producing. And it has the tested pedigree of the people from Chernobyl on it as well. On HBO, you know, HBO isn't afraid of throwing money at stuff. I mean, look at what they do with Game of Thrones. They're like, have as much money as you want. The only thing that stood in its way was the creators didn't want to do it anymore. So really the groundwork is being laid for this to be a big success.
Yep. And HBO will allow them the freedom to go in the territory that I think other movie studios might've been a little hesitant to go in. So I like that aspect as well.
Yeah. And I think, you know what, if this proves to be successful, I think we could see more television adaptations of video games because, you know, I remember years ago, we talked about the BioShock movie, right? It was in development hell. Will they, won't they? It seemed like such a great property. And the more I think about it, and the more we talk about The Last of Us, the more I realize that film is not a good way to adapt video games. It's just not. Video games are set up episodically. They have chapters. They have levels. They have, you know, I'm thinking about The Last of Us. It's, you play through four seasons. Like literally four seasons, spring, summer, fall, winter, you know, so you could, I mean, those are the various seasons of a television series.
Yep.
You know, I mean, structurally, it's basically already written like a TV show. So this is, you know, if Last of Us, I mentioned this like several months ago when they first announced this, if this succeeds, this could be that break in the dam that allows, you know, potentially a lot of other projects to come out of it. And along those lines, we see this report. This is from a few weeks ago, but it fits right in here with our discussion here, that Sony, specifically PlayStation, has developed a branch that is dedicated solely to making film and television adaptations out of their properties. And they have the Uncharted movie with Tom Holland that's coming out, I think, later this year. Tom Holland and Mark Wahlberg, that's going to be a thing. You know, it's already, it's already been shot. It's in post-production. It's going to come out. They have The Last of Us TV show, which is obviously full steam ahead. But they said, quote, it's just the beginning. Sony has 10 adaptations, 7 shows, and 3 movies in the works based on their properties. Rich, I mean, what do you think? Given the news about The Last of Us and Uncharted, I mean, could this be, yeah, are we on the precipice of this huge wave of change where we're going to see some of our favorite franchises finally get the treatment they deserve? I mean, is this what we finally needed, one of the big three to be directly involved like PlayStation is? They have a film, I mean, they have a film division at Sony.
It makes sense. It makes sense that they would be the ones to do it. But I think ultimately it does come down to how these first two entities do between The Last of Us and the Uncharted movie. Because, you know, you can see, obviously with entertainment, you can green light as many things as you want.
Right.
But, you know, there are just some things I'll believe it when I see it. Unfortunately, with the track record for video game adaptations, it's been too spotty. So I think we won't really get a definitive answer until we see how Last of Us and the Uncharted adaptations do. I'll believe it when I see it is the ultimate.
Okay. Okay. You'll believe it when you see it. Meanwhile, I am full steam ahead on the hype train. You know, I'm just thinking about all the amazing games that I wish I could share with people that don't play games. Mm-hmm. You know, like I literally, you know, while I was working from home, my mom's been in the other room watching The Last of Us Part 2 on YouTube. You know,
yeah.
I found her like because
Rachel does that too, because there are games that I really love, and but you know, you can't really replay them.
Right.
So sometimes you need to find those, like they edit on YouTube. They edit the video game cutscenes into like a movie, and you can watch it that way.
Yeah. And so my mom, I found an 11-hour video for her.
Wow. That's dedication.
The Last of Us 2 was a big game.
Yeah.
You know, because she was upset. She watched me play the first one. I'm like, look, I can't play the second one. It's just too emotionally and mentally draining. I was like, you know, I have like low grade PTSD from playing that game.
Yeah.
So I was like, you can watch this 11-hour video. And she did. And I mean, she was just, you know, gripped by it. She loved the first one, and she's watching this. You know, basically like, you know, you would a television series.
Well, yeah, go back.
An actual television series.
Go back 11 hours. That would be an 11 episode season.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a 10 through 12 episode season easily. But what's interesting is my dad saw the last half hour of her watching this, of course, leave it to my dad to come in the last half hour of a 2-game franchise. And he wondered whether Ellie and Joel were going to be lovers. I mean, all he saw was the one scene of them. He's like, "Oh, are they going to be? Are they going to?" I was like, "No, Dad."
Frank.
Yeah, I know, right? Retirement man. He's slipping. But it makes me think, like, these are amazing stories. You know, separate from the fact of them being video games, they're just amazing stories that so many people don't get to experience because they don't play video games or they don't have gamers in their lives, you know? So I'm just really excited to share these stories with people that normally wouldn't ever get to experience them. Like my dad, like he's never sat down and watched me play a video game. And now I can be like, here, watch this show. This is what I'm talking about. This is this amazing story that, you know, you hear me rave about. This is what it's all about. So I love the idea that they're bringing these properties to a wider audience. You know, yeah. I think that's fantastic. Because I love video games. I love sharing them with people. So the more people that get to experience them, the better. But yeah, lots of great news coming out of Sony and PlayStation and HBO. Really excited for the future of video game adaptations. Can't wait to see where everything goes. Really looking forward to later 2021. When Uncharted and The Last of Us could both be hitting screens. Boy. So keep an eye out for that. Yeah.
Yeah,
what a time to be alive, man.
That would be an interesting way to end the year.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Something else that is supposedly trying to come out at the end of 2021 is another entry into the Jackass series.
Okay.
And I don't know why, but they're trying to film Jackass 4. But unfortunately, there is some backstage drama, and it has to do, out of all the characters, has to do with Westchester's own Bam Margera. He took to Instagram over the weekend and made a very bizarre Instagram live post where he claimed that he was being kicked off of the set. He claimed that due to his past history with alcoholism, that Paramount Pictures was forcing him to take random breathalyzer tests, at any time during the day. He claimed that one happened at 3 a.m. Basically had this really weird meltdown live on Instagram.
Yikes.
Yeah. And then the following day announced that all of that was a mistake, and that he is being diagnosed with manic bipolar disorder.
That's sad to hear.
This is a whole big ball of confusion. Number one, I didn't even know that there was going to be a Jackass 4 in the works, which I think is a little weird.
I never watched the originals, so I don't have as much of a connection to it as you do. But for the fact that there's 4 of these things, I mean,
look,
come on, guys.
Here's the thing. This was funny 15 years ago when they were all in their mid-20s and, you know, they had nothing to lose. But now we're talking about the same cast that is in their 40s. Johnny Knoxville, I think he's probably 50. He was kind of like the ringleader. So I think he's probably a little bit older than everybody else. I don't know why you would even want to get together and do these shenanigans again, other than just for the sake of money. If Paramount Pictures, be honest, if Paramount Pictures is throwing millions of dollars at this, then of course I see the reason why, but still, I don't know. This just, first off, just on the surface, this doesn't have a good look for anybody involved. But now you have this whole drama with Bam Margera, and he just doesn't look good. Even if he's getting treatment for manic bipolar disorder that he claims that he's getting, he should be nowhere near this movie. This is just a whole big ball of bad news. I just feel like in my gut. I don't know. Am I being too cynical about this? Am I on the right path? What do you think?
No, I think you're on the right path. I think this is it. I don't think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
From any perspective, four Jackasses, I don't see the appeal. Like you said, it honestly seems a little cringy to me to be chasing a fourth one of these after so many years. Two, specifically about Bam Margera, I mean, if you have issues with, you know, substance abuse and, you know, mental health issues, this is definitely not the type of show that you should be doing. You know, health and mental well-being comes first. You know, I know Paramount rolling up with a huge check is, you know, complicating things, but it just doesn't seem like the right environment for somebody going through stuff like that, you know? And at a certain point, as with all jokes, as we know, you can run it into the ground. You can beat it to death. And, you know, the rule is, first time it's funny, second time it's, you know, still good. Third time it starts to wear thin. When you get to the fourth time, joke's not funny anymore.
Fourth time, you know? And they're all in their mid-40s. You know, I don't see the appeal.
Yeah.
So.
No. It seems like a mistake from top to bottom.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're going to do it, but I would really like to suggest that somebody in Westchester, I don't know, somebody pull Bam Margera aside and just ask him why. Just don't do it. He needs to do some soul searching out on his own and not with this franchise.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. Okay, so you know, I think it's appropriate. We ended on a odd movie, so I think that's a good transition into the odd news, right? Okay.
Yeah, so, that's right. Oh my gosh. There's some serious lag going on here, Rich.
Oh no. It's coming back again. Oh
yeah, it's coming back again. I hate what is with this crappy third world country Ambler internet.
Yeah, that's
I swear it's the worst.
Man, what the hell's happening in Ambler? The Amish, they got better internet than you do right now.
I don't know. All right, let's see if we can make it through this odd news while I still have internet and power, apparently.
Yeah, before you end up like the Amish.
Yeah.
We are going to Florida in this week's story. So
okay,
if you
perfect
do your catchphrase.
Yeah, absolutely. Who is this effing guy in Florida? It's Florida and they're crazy.
That's right. We are following the case of a Florida woman named Joanna Zielinski.
Okay.
A Florida woman who repeatedly stabbed her sister with an EpiPen told cops that she was simply just allergic to drunkenness.
She was allergic to drunkenness?
Yes. Investigators say that 62-year-old Joanna Zielinski and her sister Laura were drinking last night in their home when Laura suddenly passed out on the couch. Of course, that's what will happen when you drink too much.
Yes.
Joanna, on the other hand, stayed up and consumed even more alcoholic beverages.
Okay, so, smart choice, of course.
Yep, sorry, you're too lame. You passed out. I'm keeping the party going, baby.
That's just called alcoholism.
Yeah. At some point, Joanna got very angry that Laura was still passed out. She tried yelling at her and slapping her, and then took the EpiPen and stabbed her multiple times with it.
Oh, you're only supposed to stab an EpiPen once, first of all.
When police officers arrived, she claimed that, quote, "I'm allergic to drunkenness, so I injected her with the EpiPen so she wouldn't be drunk anymore."
Okay, so wait. She's allergic. The one doing the stabbing is allergic to drunkenness.
That's what she claims.
Okay, so she stabbed the other person to get them to not be drunk. There's two fatal flaws with this logic. One, if you're allergic to something, you're the one that should be stabbing yourself with the life-saving EpiPen.
Yeah.
Okay. Number two, EpiPen doesn't cure drunkenness. I'm sure she knew that if she were sober. Unfortunately, she decided to drink by herself next to her passed out friend, which again is alcoholism.
Yeah. So this logic doesn't make any sense here.
No.
EMS workers were called because they were worried that, you know, EpiPen, it is a medical drug.
It is. Yep.
So they were concerned with Laura's well-being. EMS workers showed up, but that's when they found out that there was no actual puncture from the EpiPen.
And she didn't take the cap off, did she?
Yep. And when they went to inspect it further, the cap was still on the EpiPen. So,
man,
she thought she was doing, you know, some good stabbing with the EpiPen. Nope. She didn't take the cap off. Do not let this person be the lifesaver. Or the person you call to when, you know, this is a life or death situation.
I feel really bad for other people, like, around her. Like, could you imagine if, like, one of her loved ones has, like, a deadly peanut allergy? And, like, it came down to this lady administering an EpiPen to save this person's life? That person's dead.
Yeah, you're
that
gone.
Person's, they're gone, yeah.
Why is this not working?
There's very clear instructions on an EpiPen about how to administer it. I know that from working on drug labeling in the past. And well, the key is that they're not written for drunken people. So that's the problem. See, the FDA needs to make it so that there's drunken versions of label. You know, on one side of the package it has the little tiny print, you know, details and everything. On the other side, giant words, take off cap, just in case.
Yeah, that would be very important. Make sure you take the cap off.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess in a weird way, everything worked out, but.
Sure, why not?
But dear God, yeah, if this person is ever in charge of an emergency situation, it's going straight to hell.
Oh, yeah.
She does not follow instructions. She has horrible logic. She doesn't. She has drunken. She has allergies to drunkenness.
Yeah.
By that logic, she can't be near a bar.
So wait, she's allergic to drunkenness, but she was drinking as well. Yeah, is she like what, trying to build up her tolerance? What does that even mean?
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense either. I don't know. There's so many things wrong with this story.
Oh my God.
EMS workers were able to confirm that no medication was injected into Laura due to the cap on the EpiPen. However, the victim did have large welts on her right thigh.
Yeah, from having a capped EpiPen being jabbed into her.
Why is this not working?
Oh my God. What a disaster.
Yeah. Speaking of disasters, I have her mugshot here. Let's see if I can get that going.
You're right. A disaster.
Yeah. Boy, she is she's
definitely allergic to drunkenness from that.
Yeah, she's an interesting mugshot.
Yeah.
She has just a weird vacant stare, and her blonde hair is just all over the place.
To be fair to mugshots, they don't ever make anybody look decent because they're always taken at the worst possible time, you know. But that one was that one
when
was
when
was
you're allergic
rough.
When you're allergic and they force you to take a mugshot, how dare they?
Really, it's the cop's fault when you break it down.
If the cap has not been removed, why don't you use the EpiPen on yourself if you're allergic to drunkenness?
Right, exactly. Yeah, you still have a perfectly good EpiPen.
Yeah, the EpiPen is still fine. Use it. Let's
also
cure your allergies.
On an unrelated note, I would be super pissed if somebody wasted an EpiPen on somebody who was drunk. EpiPens cost like several hundred dollars, and they're hard to come by. So, man, nothing that lady did was right.
No. Do not trust this lady with any sort of life or death situations. It will end up on the death side.
It will end up on the death side. Yes. Yes, it will.
Yeah. She was booked on a misdemeanor count of domestic battery. So
yep.
That'll do it. That's the charge she's going to get. So there you go. Make sure you're using your EpiPen correctly, and if you're allergic to drunkenness, don't go on a drinking binge.
Yeah, right.
That's counterintuitive.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, I'm allergic to peanuts, I'm gonna go to the peanut factory, you know.
So me personally, kind of a little aside here, I the only thing I'm allergic to is like pollen.
Same.
And I swear to God, like, what was it, 2 summers ago before COVID happened, all of my friends wanted to go to Longwood Gardens. And I'm like, why? This is like the worst spot you could send me to. I don't like the heat. I don't like flowers. Like, this is like, so, you're literally torturing me here.
So I'll say this about Longwood Gardens. It's a cool place. I've only been in the winter though. So
yeah, much better time.
Yeah, I can't really speak to the heat and the pollen, but man, I'm right there with you. Pollen, anything that blooms. I mean, I've had 2 allergy tests in my life. One when I was real young, and I've only heard tales, you know, of the legend of how many blisters I developed. And then once several years ago, just to get retested for allergies. And man, like every single test they ran, you're like, yep, you're allergic to it. Basically anything that blooms or flowers, I'm allergic to.
Yeah.
In addition to melons.
Huh.
Cucumbers. Okay. I'm allergic to raw cucumbers. And bananas are part of that family, but I still like bananas. They don't cause me too much grief. But raw cucumbers sometimes make my mouth itch. And cantaloupe, and honeydew. Yeah. It's a shame because they're all delicious.
Yeah, but I don't have that. No, I'm only pollen, but and dust technically.
Yeah, dust as well. Yeah.
I don't think anybody enjoys dust. That's a weird
dust. They're just dusting and they like snort it. Like, yeah, I love dust. Whoever goes in the attic or the closet or the basement, like, oh yeah, let me get some dust up in my nostrils. Nobody says that.
Let me get a nice line going here.
Yeah. Oh God. That physically causes me pain to hear that.
Yeah. All right. So there you go. That's the odd news for this week. Somehow getting off on what we're allergic to.
A brief medical history.
Yeah. A brief medical history, and don't trust that Florida woman with any emergency.
Yeah.
All right. Before we officially wrap this episode up and before the internet conks out on us one more time, Mike, it's time for Apocalypse Activities. You have any recommendations for people to watch?
Yeah. Well, not to watch, but recently I've been playing Death Stranding, which I mentioned a few weeks ago. And I just got to say, you know, if you really want to crank up the weirdness of just the past year and change to 11, give Death Stranding a spin. Because if there's a world stranger than ours currently is, it's the world of Death Stranding.
Yeah.
Where rain speeds up time and you have a little baby and a little like water jug on your person. And you're basically an Amazon delivery person in this game, in like this barren wasteland. It's really, really weird. The game, just the systems, the story, the gameplay, it's just all has this air of weirdness. But for whatever reason, I'm captivated by it and I want to keep playing it, whether it's to see how the weirdness plays out or because I'm enjoying the systems. I don't quite know yet, but there's an itch that's being scratched by playing this game. It's somewhat cathartic to like plan out your delivery route and to figure out, you know, how to, you know, get all the packages onto your person before you set out. And then as you're going along your route, trying to figure out like, oh, I can't go through that water. It's a little too deep. Like there's a good amount of like every step you take, you're thinking through it. You're really thinking about how you're going to approach the next leg of the journey. Sort of like a metaphor for life. But yeah, exactly. But it's interesting. It's scratching an itch. So go check out Death Stranding. Other than that, give Cobra Kai a shot. Like I said, at the top of the show, it really is. It's not going to knock your socks off in terms of like being, you know, an instant dramatic classic or anything, but it's really fun. It's really intriguing. It's really captivating. It's charming. It's funny. You know, it's got good drama in terms of like, you know, the whole teenage, you know, love triangle thing going on and old high school rivals, which is super weird. I love how self-aware it is, where like the wife comes in and she's like, are two grown men really about to karate kick each other? And then, you know, it's like everybody is the wife in that scene. They're like, really, guys? Two very weird things that I'm into right now, Death Stranding and Cobra Kai. You know, so go crank up the weirdness. Give them a shot.
Yeah, they're both very good entities. I love Cobra Kai. Go for it.
Absolutely. What about you, Rich?
I guess the thing I'm going to recommend is something I recently just got into was WandaVision.
Oh, yeah, of course.
WandaVision, I got to say, it is a great show. I was one of those naysayers that I was like, I don't know if this is going to be worth my time. You know, is this really going to be a strong Marvel entity? But it is. And I kind of feel like this show is what sane people were hoping Twin Peaks would be. Because, you know, to like Twin Peaks, you have to like David Lynch and you have to be willing to jump out off of a ledge and delve into the darkness of his weird idiosyncrasies when it comes to his stories. And I don't think people can get over it real quickly or real easily. And I think that's why some people won't enjoy Twin Peaks. But maybe if you were curious about Twin Peaks, but you couldn't deal with the weirdness, the utter weirdness of it, but you want a little bit of weirdness, WandaVision's up your alley. It's a very good show, just enough weird that it gets you involved and makes you question things, what's happening, but it's still Marvel, so there's a reasoning behind it. And every episode has been fantastic. And I got to give them props. They pulled this off. I'm very happy with it.
Yeah, I've been super impressed with it. I'm watching it as well. Staying up to date on it every Friday. I make sure I watch my episode. I am super intrigued by the whole thing. I'm a huge Marvel fan. I've watched basically every single MCU movie, and I'm really excited that they're expanding the universe into TV now. And I'm really happy that it's tying directly into everything. It has, you know, callbacks to the movies and characters from the movies. And I'm just really excited to dive more into that universe. And shame on you for thinking a Marvel property would be bad. Has there been a bad Marvel movie yet?
Not an outright bad Marvel movie. No,
They're like Pixar, where even the bad ones are still decent.
Okay. Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although I'm not much of a Pixar. I only really know Toy Story and maybe.
Nah, like- I know you're soulless. It's okay.
God damn it. Get off my lawn. All right. I'm trying.
You really are.
I'm trying to watch my golf here. All right. Golf is coming up in April. Okay. Let me have my golf.
You are a 70-year-old man.
Yes. But until then, until we get to April and the Masters and one of my favorite times of the year, we got to wrap this episode up. Another episode of the podcast in the books. Somehow we made it through the snow, my no laptop situation.
My internet.
Mikey's Amish internet crapping out.
It's running on 1 horsepower.
Yeah, somehow. Yeah, yeah, perfect. You got to get another horse. You got to buy.
I got to get that second horse.
Yeah. Somehow we came together and still got an episode for you. That is the mission of the Crispy Compact Communique. No matter what the elements are, we're still giving you a fresh podcast. If you like what you heard and you enjoyed it, make sure you go to our website, thecrispynoodle.com. Make sure you're following us on all the social media channels where we have, you know, some random news updates and stuff. By the way, actually, you know what? We got a little bit of time. Quick update on the story where the Super Bowl streaker, he was supposed to win a whole bunch of money on that prop bet.
Right.
Guess what, Mike? Because he blabbed to everybody that he did it on purpose. The sports book is saying he was directly involved in the outcome of the bet, so he cannot collect the money.
Dude, wait until after you get the money.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, don't wait. Yeah. New rule. Make sure you wait till after you collect the money to brag about your massive win.
What a dummy.
Not before.
What a dummy. Ugh.
But we broke that story on Facebook and Twitter. So there you go. Make sure you follow us on those social media channels. You never know what we may post on those. And make sure you're following us and the whole shebang.
That's right. In addition to the whole shebang, we also have our YouTube channel where you get video versions of this podcast. But if you still want the audio version, you can get that as well. You can find us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Amazon devices. So make sure you search for, download, and subscribe to the Crispy Noodle Podcast on YouTube or the podcast service of your choice.
That's right. We also have a SoundCloud page. Check that out for our promos, the mini noodles. That's what we call them. Check those out for a quick laugh as well.
That's right. So many ways to get in touch with and share the Crispy Noodle Podcast. But if you want to get in touch with us individually on Twitter to share your sports, entertainment, or odd news stories, you can find us there as well. I'm at Mikey Costanzo, MikeyCostanzo.
And I am at Rich Liebig, RichLiebig. Find us on the Twitters and let us know what's happening. And if there's anything you want us to talk about on next week's podcast, let us know and we'll give you a shout out if we use it as a topic. But for right now, it is time to wrap this episode up. This has been the Crispy Compact Communique, the 2021 version of the Crispy Noodle Podcast. Let us be the crispy noodle in your vegetarian salad of life and boring news. You got anything else, Mike?
No, nope, that's it on my end.
All right. Now your internet can officially crap out.
Okay.
But for us, that'll do it. We'll see you guys next week.
All right. See you guys.
Later, all you fine peoples. See ya.